everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today. This is a show that is really for the purpose of empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And as always, it's such a pleasure to have you join me today for another amazing conversation, exploration into a deeper truth of who we are, which really is the greater purpose for which we are here, to really know who we are. Before I take you on this journey with my wonderful guest today, I want to welcome people who are listening for the first time. I invite you to go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, and that's also my Facebook page, What Women Must Know. Like me over there. I post on a regular basis great information, and my website and my Facebook page is a place to get all the archive shows that, if you didn't catch live, you can certainly listen to them when they are posted either of those places. And if you go up to my website and opt in there, I have some special reports that I send out to you as a gift. So great places to just keep learning, keep growing, and keep getting empowered. Okay, well, let's talk about today's show. We're going to be exploring one of my favorite topics, which is deeper levels of truth, understanding who we truly are, connecting to this vast place of love that we hear so much about, but it's our destiny to connect with. And, well, my guest today, I have two very special guests, Dr. Evan Alexander, who has been an academic neurosurgeon for the past 25 years, including 15 at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, Children's Hospital, and Harvard Medical School in Boston. And he is the author of the New York Times best-selling book, Proof of Heaven and the Map of Heaven. And Karen Newell is my other guest, and she is the co-founder of Sacred Acoustics, an innovator in the emerging field of brainwave entrainment audio recordings used to help listeners reach expanded states of awareness. And they are both the authors of this new book, Living in a Mindful Universe, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Heart of Consciousness. So I want to welcome both of you to the show and just let you know how thrilled I am to have you here today. We're going to have a fantastic conversation.
Thanks, Cheryl. It's great to be here.
Yes, thank you.
Well, let's just jump into it. I'm going to start with you, Evan. For people who have not read your best-selling book, Proof of Heaven, which has had a huge impact around the world, I want you to just kind of give it's hard to ask you to do a brief summary, but you'll do a good job of what happened to you. And a little bit about the journey that you went on and where you were. You started as a neurosurgeon, which is such training to be able to have those skills, and where it led you and where you are now. So I'll just
It's important to point out I had spent the first 54 years of my life really buying into the conventional scientific view of what's called reductive materialism or physicalism, that the entire universe is just physical stuff, that we happen to be conscious beings made out of physical stuff, but the consciousness is just an illusion, an unimportant byproduct of the chemical reactions in the brain. And I bought into that. And, of course, the implications are that our existence is birth to death, nothing more, that the brain creates consciousness out of physical matter, and that when we die, of course, that's the end of conscious awareness. Now, my NDE refutes that very powerfully, and I'm often asked to speak to medical nursing groups, scientific groups, because they realize that the medical details of my case pretty much eliminate the possibility that my experience could have been a hallucination or a drug effect or some kind of confabulation or dream state, because, in fact, to have any kind of hallucination, dream state, or mental experience like that necessitates, according to modern neuroscience, that at least some of your neocortex be working. The neocortex is the outer surface of the brain. It's the part that makes us human. Every single thought, every perception, every bit of what we've experienced mentally and phenomenologically since before we were born, according to modern neuroscience, demands that the most powerful calculator in the brain, that is the neocortex, be participating. And yet meningitis is a perfect model for human death, and that's what my doctors diagnosed within a few hours of my collapsing in coma at home. They determined that I had a severe gram-negative bacterial meningitis, so that when I first entered the emergency room in coma and seizing that Monday morning in November 2008, they estimated I had a 10% probability of recovery. By the end of that week of coma, I was down to a 2% chance of recovery with no chance, a 2% chance of survival, but no chance of recovery. And so the fact that within 8 weeks after waking up from coma, I had a complete recovery of all my mental function and memories, even better than before coma, is a real shocker. And my doctors to this day will tell you there's no Western medical explanation for my recovery at all. So I've had to deal with that. Now, the beautiful thing, though, is the journey that I had deep in coma, which, of course, is described in great detail in the book Proof of Heaven. It all began in what I call the earthworm's eye view, a very primitive, coarse, unresponsive realm. But then there came this spinning melody, a spinning white light that had a perfect musical melody that served as a portal up into higher realms, into an ultra-real gateway valley with many earth-like features like butterflies and rich, lush plant life and lots of souls dancing in the meadow below me, a beautiful girl on the butterfly wing, and yet also deep spiritual features like angelic choirs swooping up above. Now, lest your listening audience be misled, it's important to point out that that gateway valley was far more real than this world. Now, of course, I'd never read the near-death experience literature before, so I didn't realize that more than half of NDEers report that that world is even more real than this one. This material world that we live in is the murky, dreamy, kind of confusing one. That realm is shockingly real, and it's because we actually have gotten rid of the veiling function of the brain. We've traversed that veil into universal mind, and this is a point that Karen and I make in Living in a Mindful Universe, is to trace this kind of scientific lineage and thinking about brain, mind, and consciousness to realizing we are all manifestations of that primordial mind. So on this particular journey in my coma, from that beautiful ultra-real gateway valley, the angelic choirs provided, again, music, vibration, frequency that served as yet another portal, and all of space and time of the material realm, as well as an ordering of causality that I call deep time, which is a completely different ordering in the spiritual realm to kind of keep track of our spiritual journeys through multiple incarnations. I ascended to higher and higher levels until I reached what I call the core, infinite inky blackness, but filled to overflowing with that infinite healing power of the divine love of that creative source, that God power that so many seekers, journeyers, prophets, and mystics have encountered in many different ways over millennia. But we get lost in our modern culture. The little linguistic voice in our head trying to define and limit everything kind of comes up with these religious orthodoxies that lead us away from the real existence of that great spirit, that great God force at the core of all existence. And in that core realm, I became one with that. You know, our very language conspires against us tremendously to say we are part of that universal creative mind. We're not part of it. We are it. And this, again, is something Karen and I explore in great detail in Living in a Mindful Universe. But that was, in essence, the journey, and I would oscillate between the beautiful, ultra-real gateway valley up into the core realm of the oneness, then I would fall back down into that murky earthworm eye view realm. But by conjuring up the musical melody of those notes that I remembered associated with that spinning white light that first served as a portal taking me from earthworm eye view up into the brilliant gateway valley, I could conjure up that portal again and again. And so when I finally came back to this world on a Sunday morning, day 7 of coma, I had no memories whatsoever of my life. In fact, for the entire spiritual journey in my coma, important to point out that I was amnesic. In fact, not only did I not remember Evan Alexander's life events or anything about being a human on Earth, I had no words or language. I had a completely empty slate. And I think that was a very important part to glean the lessons that I ended up getting from all this. But, of course, those lessons are still unfolding. People have this erroneous idea that you have an NDE, and then you come back and you know, oh, now I've figured it all out. That's not the way it works. What happens is the NDE completely shatters your prior worldview, and then you come back to this world and try to make sense of it. In my case, I had to go all the way back to square one to begin making sense of it. And the good news is I came to realize that my journey as a neuroscientist, as a neurosurgeon who had this extraordinary personal experience, is exactly parallel to the awakening coming to the scientific community even now, that is actually a result of, you know, 3,000 years or more of human thought about the mind-body discussion, and especially a culmination of the 400 years of what I would call the turbulent adolescence of humanity, and that is the scientific revolution. And, of course, the last 100 years of that revolution has involved concepts of how this reality works, basically quantum physics, which to this day, the conventional scientific community has not been able to assimilate and understand. And that's because they've refused to put consciousness first and foremost, which is what the founding fathers of quantum physics, like Werner Heisenberg and Paul Dirac, Sir James Jeans, Louis de Broglie, Erwin Schrödinger, and others kept telling us, you have to put consciousness first. There's no way to make sense of this world without doing that. And science has been unable to make that leap because they're too into the supreme illusion of the reality of the physical world. But Karen and I make that leap very well in living in a mindful universe, which has tremendous scientific support from many of the global leaders in consciousness studies around this world. So we're really on to a revolution in human understanding. And that's what this is all about, is this awakening.
Wow. So let me ask you just one curious question. Whatever happened to your neocortex after your experience?
Well, the thing that happened is what we observed my mental function. When I first came out of coma, when I was first starting to wake up and gain consciousness in that ICU bed with the ventilator tube still down my trachea, I had no words or language initially, and it was all just a period of kind of confusion trying to right myself and get myself back on my kind of understanding of some sort. But as I said earlier, all my memories of my life had been erased. So in fact, as I awakened in that ICU bed, my mother, my sisters, my son standing at the bedside, I had no idea who these beings were. So it's incredibly important to stress the importance of the amnesia. But words and language came back very rapidly, literally within hours. A lot of my childhood memories and early life memories returned over a few weeks. All of my other memories of life, including a tremendous return of all my semantic knowledge about physics, cosmology, chemistry, biology, neuroscience, brain and mind and consciousness, all of that came back like a gently falling snow over about 8 weeks or so. And that was a tremendous mystery. And even more mystifying is in the years since then, based mainly on conversations with close family and friends that occurred before my coma and then similar conversations after my coma, I came to realize that my return of memory was even more complete after that coma than my memories had been before the coma. And that part is really mystifying. Something we discuss in Living in a Mindful Universe is the fact that neuroscience and neurosurgeons have never been able to find any kind of site of memory storage in the brain. And in fact, all the evidence very strongly says memories are not stored in the brain at all. So just like modern consciousness studies have come to realize, you cannot put consciousness in the brain because there's no way anybody has ever been able to connect the dots between physical brain processes and the phenomenological aspects of human mental experience. So consciousness is not contained in the brain. Likewise, memory is not either. That is one of the biggest nails in the coffin for materialist neuroscience and for materialist science at large, because the brain is not the storage side of memories. It's simply an access point where we can access consciousness and memory, but no, they're not resident within the physical structure of the brain. It serves as a filter, as a veiling mechanism to get us there. So in fact, my memories basically reprinted from my light body, from my higher soul, my deeper kind of awareness of all this, gave me all those memories back, but not in any kind of physical process that is elucidated by conventional neuroscience.
Well, so do you think this experience that you encountered in the way you did through, you know, coma, which obviously you've totally healed from, was designed to awaken you to your greater purpose that's happening now?
I would say yes. I would say that's what we do. This I've come to realize this whole universe exists to support the growth and nurturing and advancement of souls and of consciousness. It's really about the evolution of all consciousness, coming to a deeper understanding of the nature of our reality. And every one of us is a participant in this grand adventure. So yes, I would say that my particular coma experience was a big wake-up call that's part of the wake-up calls that come to all of us, because the evidence for the reality of these realms is something you don't have to go read about in somebody else's experience. And this is another very critical point of living in a mindful universe, is we want to help all individual souls realize they have the power, by going within, to connect deeply with the universe and find rich purpose and meaning in their lives. And this is why we are here, is for exactly that. We're not some chaotic accident of accidental evolution of chemical reactions that lead to this kind of mysterious quality of consciousness. Consciousness is what runs this whole universe. And we all have consciousness. We can all go within. And when you realize the physical brain is not creating consciousness, but giving us access to universal mind, going within starts to have a lot more power to it.
And, of course, this is what ancient wisdom and cultures and traditional cultures, native cultures, you know, the ancients, you know, the Greek cultures and cultures before that have really been assisting humanity to realize. You know, we're just returning. We've, you know, you're such an example of someone who had such training in the sciences and, you know, operate out of such a materialistic realm of existence that you forgot who you were until you had your awakening. And that's really what this time is about. We have to awaken. I want to kind of move over to you, Karen, because when, you know, Emily was talking about the sound and the frequencies. I when I listened to his extended story on YouTube, that really grabbed me, the power of sound and frequencies in the spiritual realm, and how music plays such a profound role in helping us to access our true selves, or connect again. Karen, can you talk about that? Because I know that's such a big part of what your journey has led you to.
Yes. Well, a moment ago you were talking about, you know, the ancient cultures, the ancient wisdom. That was actually one of my kind of drives from a very young age, because what I was learning in the conventional teaching systems, religion, secular school, I wasn't satisfied with those answers. And eventually I did turn to those ancient sort of spiritual texts that seemed to speak to me more on a visceral level. And what I realized pretty early on is that you can read about all of this stuff and make up your mind about all of these things, but until you actually have an experience, actually a personal firsthand experience, you can't really know these things, really truly know. That's a different feeling than believing. And so I set upon a path of creating experience in my life. I wasn't about to wait around for some near-death experience or something to happen. I wanted to make one happen, and so I started seeking ways to actually do that, and I took all kinds of classes, you know, remote viewing, astral travel, lucid dreaming. I learned about crystals and Reiki, healing energy, all kinds of things, and a lot of the practices involved meditation. And this was very challenging for me because I was a very busy project manager for a publishing in the publishing industry and did a lot of work with technology, web development. My mind was always racing a mile a minute, and it was sound. Sound was one of the keys to really learning how to have an experience. And at first, I would use sounds like crystal bowls or tuning forks, maybe chimes, gongs, those kind of monotonous kind of sounds, monotone sounds. And they would help me kind of get in a zone, kind of like that. Or even an airplane engine can kind of sound like that. And, you know, babies are known for sleeping in cars if they get driven around. But at any rate, it was the very specialized sound technology of binaural beats or brainwave entrainment technology that really helped me turn this around. And at first, I would listen to these kinds of things and just fall asleep. And I thought, well, that's kind of ridiculous, but it wasn't really getting me anywhere. But then I learned that these sounds are actually designed to put you into what's known as a hypnagogic state, and that's that border between awake and asleep. Now, we're all in that state every single day. When we first fall asleep at night, when we're first waking up in the morning, that kind of state where your body is very relaxed, but your mind is still aware and trying to figure out what's going on. Sometimes when you wake up, maybe in a hotel room, you don't realize where you are, and it takes a moment to get your bearings. And when these certain tones can drive you into that state more easily than sitting and meditating for an hour or what have you, it can really help kind of give you a jump start. It can help support reaching these deeper states in a quicker fashion. And because I was so successful with using this type of sound, I ended up co-founding a company called Sacred Acoustics, where we actually create sounds to help people do this. Now, a lot of times when you run into brainwave entrainment technology or binaural beats, people use it for focus, for sleep, for all different things, but we really take a more spiritual angle. Exactly what you're talking about, finding out who you truly are. And the first step is kind of emptying your mind of all of those thoughts, which are not who you are. It's what's behind those thoughts, what we call the observer. What is noticing the thoughts? What is paying attention to those thoughts? Many of us have no awareness of this observer, and becoming more aware of it can help us kind of rise above the nitty-gritty dramas of what are going on in our lives and get a bigger picture and get in touch with more of who we really are. And so the sound is really a foundation, and Evan talks about sound helping him on his journey. They were really the engine for his coma journey, but the sounds we're creating are not meant to duplicate exactly what he heard. As it turns out, those sounds are very challenging to bring back and recreate. Believe me, we've tried. But like Evan, where we met in a context where we were both using sound to explore these realms. I was a bit further along than him, and he was just, learning how these sounds can help him revisit those realms during his NDE. But they can be used for getting in touch with spiritual guidance. They can help you connect with the souls of departed loved ones, learn about your higher purpose, solve problems, create intentions. Really the sky's the limit. Achieving optimum health. There's just so many ways to approach this practice of going within, and the sound is an excellent support for that.
I was recently listening to one of the wise healers that I know, and he was quoting, I'm not sure where the quote came from, but you cannot heal with a restless mind. You have to quiet your mind to heal, and that's healing of physical disease, it's healing of emotional trauma. It goes back to you must have a quiet mind, which is such a challenge in our culture these days. And so many people say to me, I just can't meditate. I say, well, everyone can learn how to still their mind, but it takes practice. But it seems that working with the sound therapy is a way to more easily develop that ability. Is that accurate? Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, in our book, Chapter 8, The Practice of Going Within in Living in a Mindful Universe, I talk about my struggles when I first started out. The mind was racing, and I told myself, oh, I'm just like you said, I'm one of those people who can't meditate. Well, we also talk about belief systems, limiting beliefs, and that is one of them. I can't meditate. It's interesting, you know, Henry Ford, who started our auto industry here in the U.S. back, over 100 years ago, he has a famous quote, there are two kinds of people in this world, those who believe they can and those who believe they can't, and they're both right. And here he was leading a revolution into this amazing automobile industry, and that's what we're trying to do right now, is make people realize their beliefs have so much to do with what's going on in their lives. And yes, if you're going to tell yourself you can't meditate, that is surely how your reality will unfold. So along with using the sound, another useful thing is to start changing those limiting beliefs. And I did exactly that. I made a very, as Eben would say, free will, conscious choice to change that belief. And I started to tell myself, I can meditate. Of course I can meditate. And that, combined with the sound and some other techniques I learned, really helped me turn the corner. And so no one in this world can get away with that. It is an imperative for each of us to find out who we truly are. And having an unbidden experience, like many people do, is one way. But it can be cultivated, and we encourage everyone to do this.
So let me just say that if people want to have a sample of this healing sounds, I encourage you to go to the website sacredacoustics.com, because you do have a little sample meditation there. And I actually have listened to that sample meditation, and I've just purchased some of your other downloadable sound meditations, which really put me into some very deep, peaceful places. So I just love what you're doing, and encourage everyone, because it's a great way, especially with our busy minds, to work with the brain to calm down and to be able to access higher states. So I want to ask Eben, can we talk about prayer? Because I'd like to know your experience of prayer and the power of prayer and how to pray. What does that mean? We do so much of it. Does it really have an impact? And if it does, what's the best way to utilize it?
Well, I would say prayer has a tremendous impact. And in fact, it astonishes me more and more all the time as I hear more and more stories, to realize just how powerful that force of prayer can be. Now, in the years before my coma, I had a form of prayer. I had grown up in a Methodist church. My father was very spiritual. And religious, but I would say more deeply spiritual. And so from my upbringing, I had a kind of a pattern of prayer, a form of supplication and rote repetition and things like that, that occasionally seemed to have a connection and all this. But for me, after my coma, all that shifted very dramatically. And it was really from my personal experience of becoming one with that all-loving creative source at the core of the universe. Realizing that's so crucial. You know, our religion, I think, certainly the religious orthodoxy I grew up with in North Carolina through a Methodist church, did not really allow for that oneness with the divine. And yet my coma journey showed me very clearly that that is the reality. In fact, I would say that our very spark of conscious awareness is an absolute and direct result of that oneness with the divine. And so my journey showed me very clearly that the universe would take care of me, that you can trust in it. And I think that is one of the most beautiful things to gain from all this. And we can all gain that from going within. But I would say that prayer now is much more kind of just a thy will be done, an admission that the right things will happen as long as I do my best to do the right things in my life. And the right things are ideally to make all choices in life out of love, compassion, acceptance, forgiveness, and mercy, to really come from that beautiful spiritual place of connection where I realize that hurting another is really hurting myself, because we're really all sharing the consciousness of that one mind, of that God consciousness. And seeing that prayer has tremendous power, something that was revealed to me within my journey as I tell in Proof of Heaven, as I was emerging from those worlds after I had been, in a sense, kind of walled off from the highest spiritual realms, which I'd been warned about. It was very fair. But I was also taught by that time that I could trust. And so when I was kind of walled off from that and I was on my way back to this world, what I witnessed were thousands of beings going off into the mists around me, all with heads bowed and murmuring. I couldn't understand any of the words because my brain was still not at any kind of point where words and language were back to me yet. But that murmuring energy had this incredible emotional power of connection, of engagement, of support, of trustworthiness. And that was a tremendous gift, seeing that, yes, you can trust in the universe. So I would say now what's happened is my prayers are much more all about health and healing, about the oneness that we all share, that a win-win situation is always possible, and that my only responsibility as an awakened spiritual being in this process is to try to my best ability to manifest every choice I can make in this life, especially in my dealings with other beings, to be one of manifesting that love. And I think that's one of the most important things, is to realize that power of prayer is best bundled with a trust in the universe that God force will provide for us, and also the knowing that we have a tremendous power to influence the outcome of events through the free will of our higher soul. And this is where I think prayer is most important and effective.
Well, can you elaborate on that? Because I think that's such an important point, what you just said, this ability to influence things. There's a certain degree of free will. Let me just say that, you know, I've been talking to various people recently, and they have family members who are struggling and just aren't open to hearing, you know, the possibilities of if they make changes, what's available to them, or people who are family members who are with, their loved ones, and they may be dealing with dementia, they may be dealing with a hospice situation, they'd be dying. How do we, when we don't have the words and people are not receptive to what we want to share or to offer, then the frustration that happens for so many people, what is it that we need to do to really make a difference in those situations?
Well, I think really this is all about coming to know our purpose, our shared purpose and, quote, individual purpose in living these lives. It's never really individual. In fact, it's very myopic to try and look at one soul's journey, even over multiple incarnations, and pretend you can view it in isolation. We're really all in this together. And so it really is a question of opening up to that connection, to that sense of purpose and an ability to trust in the universe, and to realize that loving connection, to always make those choices out of love. And I realized early on in my experience after coma that, in fact, so many of the hardships in this world are not because I didn't love my neighbor enough or love my enemy enough. It's that I didn't love myself enough. And the best way to manifest that love is to recover that sense of connection with the universe, that our life has tremendous meaning and purpose, and that every choice we make makes a difference. Even our thoughts make a tremendous difference. And I think to me that was a beautiful gift. And it also completely works contrary to the conventional materialist scientific worldview that pretends that consciousness is an illusion of the chemical reactions and electron fluxes in the brain, and even goes so far as to say none of us have free will. That's a very proud conclusion of modern conventional materialist physicalist science, that there's no such thing as human free will. It's a laughable illusion. And I would say my coma journey showed me just the opposite is true. So much of kind of getting to deep truth is actually 180 degrees opposite from much of that conventional scientific wisdom. So I think this is really kind of connecting with that sense of common purpose, that we're all in this together, that it's really about opening our minds to the grand sense of who we are and how that relates to other people.
Now, I'd just like to add, you asked, what can we do when others around us aren't really getting the message. And as many of us who have tried may realize, when you talk about these things, if the other party isn't open to it, you can only get so far. And so what I've tried to do in my own life is focus on myself. And when you start to really bring that kind of energy, if you're worried about someone else finding their purpose, have you found yours? And so, you know, this idea of just going within, finding that place inside, I actually tap into heart energy rather frequently. And HeartMath Institute in California will tell you that as you focus energy inside your own heart, it actually affects the people around you through the electromagnetic field that is measurable. And as you begin to hold more peace, harmony, love, what have you, balance in your own kind of energetic system, it affects the people around you, whether they realize it or not. And so that's a very practical tool that people can use, which is learn about how this heart energy works. I'm not sure I have time to spell all that out, but HeartMath Institute has tons of information about this. But it basically involves just focusing gratitude in your own heart and feeling that energy, what it feels like. And as you do this, you realize that this love feeling is actually generated from inside your own heart. And when you focus that energy, just that feeling, it affects people around you, whether they realize it or not. And it can be a very useful tool to focus on yourself when you're trying to help others in just that fashion. It sounds kind of antithetical, but it really does work that way.
And what about instead of trying to get them to understand or to hear what you want to say, is it just holding them in love when you meditate?
Absolutely.
And you go, just love them and let them
Absolutely.
And honor their process, honor their journey.
Yes, and their journey may not be to get to these truths in the same way that we do. They need their own experience, and talking to them till you're blue in the face will only get you so far. And, you know, Eben talks about our higher souls and connecting through our higher souls. You know, you can go into that space if you're practiced that way and imagine yourself connecting to their higher soul, not their soul here on earth that has dialogue with you, but that other part. And it can be very useful. Whether it sounds all woo-woo to some people, like, oh, that's just ridiculous, but science is showing us, lo and behold, that it actually is true, that we are connected, that it can be measurable through these heart fields, and it's actually rather amazing that science can support this.
Good. So I think that gives people something to do, but not necessarily doing in the way we have been conditioned to do, you know, take an action, external action. It's an internal action where
Correct.
Where we connect. You know, there's another level that we connect with everyone. And that's the place where we want to go to facilitate healing or support people in times of difficulties. You know, so it's nice to hear that affirmed by you, you know, both of you, that that's a power. That's a real power that we have.
Well, it is. And this is something, as Karen says, is very much supported by science. And the other thing about that is it really involves a shift in the scientific worldview. And what you'll find is that all of our discussion in Living in Mindful Universe centers around the mind-body discussion, or the relationship between brain and mind. And that is not a new discussion. That's actually been going on for about at least 2,400 years. And that is where this gets very interesting, because just as the fathers of quantum physics tried to advise us over the last century or so about the meaning of these experiments and what they're telling us about the nature of reality, fundamentally they're saying that consciousness is the thing that exists and creates everything else. The whole material, observable physical universe emerges out of consciousness. And when you start to really grok the power of that scientific revelation and the awakening coming to the scientific world, all through the measurement paradox in quantum physics of the primacy of consciousness, then it makes sense that going within, coming to realize that our, you know, individual human conscious awareness is only a small little peninsula coming off of the vastly powerful, creative, and loving force, that God force at the core of all creation, we start to realize that going within and having these kind of shifts within our mental space has tremendous power in influencing what occurs in the lives of ourselves and other sentient beings, living to our true purpose and meaning.
Right. Well, you know, I'm just taking a breath here. Take it all. You know, I'm looking.
It's pretty amazing.
It is amazing. I'm looking at the cover of your book, and you have that spiral, that golden mean, on the cover of your book, which is a very powerful symbol because, you know, we're talking about receiving these energies and frequencies that are manifesting our physical reality, which is like, you know, that's really mind expansive. It's so powerful. I was, when I was recently in Costa Rica, I was collecting these shells, and there were these long snail shells, and they had this perfect spiral. And you know, they created this perfect spiral up this long shell, and I just looked at it and marveled at it because that perfect spiral is part of these energies that are creating and expressing and manifesting in, you know, in every aspect of our life and how the measurements of our body and flowers, you know, I know you know this only too well, but, you know, you see it there in the physical world. It's a reminder of this energy that's creating all life. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I love that you brought up the golden mean because that's something that has always been fascinating to me. How does that pattern show up in nature over and over and over again? And, in fact, the sound technology that we create is very much focused on these kinds of numerical patterns found in nature. We are inspired by the golden mean, the cycles of planets, all kinds of other numbers that show up, and we use those numbers in our tone creation in hopes that they allow us to tap into that energy of our earth, our matter. The matter that we witness, as you just described, is full of these sort of mathematical kinds of things you can see, and music is math. And so we harness those numbers. We're not traditional musicians, and so when people ask us, well, what key was that in, you know, we don't use traditional ways of approaching this, but we do take those numbers and apply them using harmonic principles, and it creates amazing soundscapes that we think are tapping right into that actual structure of the universe. And science also tells us that everything is a vibration. Vibration is also music, and that's the vibration we can actually hear with our physical ears. So there's so many possibilities of where you can go, and so many people have been inspired by that golden mean, and that's no accident.
No accident. I interviewed Jonathan Goldman. You must be familiar with Jonathan Goldman.
Yes.
He's in sound because he has a new book about humming. And so we were talking about humming, but when I thought, well, this is a pretty simple topic, humming. How are we going to get an hour out of this conversation on my show? But it just took us into the deeper meaning and the cosmic hum and ohm and the sound that created the universe. And suddenly we were way out there in our conversation. And it made me realize how profound, even just a simple hum, vibrating with a hum, is having a potential to shift our consciousness.
Yes, absolutely. And that making the sound yourself, along with the passive listening, I mean, there's a lot of approaches to listening to music. You can just put on the headphones, sit back and listen and wait to see what happens. Or you can start to interact with those vibrations, and humming or oming or chanting or mantras, any of that can put you in touch with that. And of course, Eben, the sound that he heard.
Right. In that core realm was that om. And, you know, in the ultimate sanctum sanctorum of the divine, the pure oneness. And that is completely indescribable with any kind of human language, because all of our language is about defining and separating and limiting, and that is about the oneness of the universe. And in that realm, the most powerful aspect was that emotional force of love and the infinite healing power of unconditional love of that God force. And I came back to this world trying to write it all up in the next weeks after my coma, and I called that deity Om, because that's what I remembered from that realm, was that deep resonance in all of infinity and eternity, that I came back as a memory of the sound of Om. Of course, on these journeys, one thing is to realize is that we don't see with the eyes and hear with the ears. We become aspects of the universe, and through identity, that's much of how the knowledge is transferred. So it's not that teeny little linguistic bottleneck we're used to of the little narrative of trying to understand things. This is a full-blown awareness by identification with, and Om was the way I named that deity coming back to this world. And of course, I came to realize in months and years after that, especially contacted by practitioners of many different meditative systems like Sufism, Islamic mysticism, Christian mysticism, Kabbalism, Jewish mysticism, Hinduism, Buddhism, what have you, is that Om, that primary force of pure love and connection at the core of the universe, is really universal. And it's our linguistic brain that tries to split it out, and that includes the orthodoxies of religion, where that Om sound was just so pure, and that's why going within is a beautiful way to connect with it, and why Om is such a part and parcel of these sacred acoustics kinds of meditative experiences.
Well, thanks for helping to, you know, explain that to us. I want to go back to you, get back into the physical realm. Are you doing neurosurgery now? Are you in practice?
Well, you can't do that part-time. And so I realized, I guess it was about 4 or 5 months before Proof of Heaven came out in 2012, I was already getting so busy with presentations and talks and finalizing the book and writing articles that I really didn't have time to do justice to my patients. So I really had to let that go. I mentioned more of my neurosurgical heritage and all in this book, Living in a Mindful Universe, and show how it connects very dramatically with this ongoing mission. Your listeners don't have to worry that those 20-plus years spent in academic neurosurgery were wasted time at all, because they were all absolutely essential to my coming to the deep realizations, especially as we portray them in this book, Living in a Mindful Universe. And I would also like to inform your listeners, there's a companion workbook that goes with our book. And this companion workbook is completely free. It's online. It's in the form of a 33-day email campaign. For each of 33 days, you receive an email concerning one of the main topics of our book, Living in a Mindful Universe. And believe me, 33 is not the limit. We have many more topics we cover in the book. But this covers some of the main topics and helps to let every individual soul participate in this journey. So each day an email comes that has one of the main concepts, and then it has some practical things for one's daily practice of meditation or of reflection on their life, what have you. And then many of the days also come with a resource attached. So I would strongly urge your listeners to participate in this 33-day course, the companion workbook that is the free companion to our book, Living in a Mindful Universe, because no soul should be left behind. This awakening for humanity is something that we want to share with all beings, and that's what this is really all about.
How do people access that?
Well, if you go to evanalexander.com, right there on my main homepage, there's this wiggling big rectangular button, invitation into your 33-day journey into the heart of consciousness. And all you do is click on that, leave an email and a first name, and then for 33 days you'll receive these emails. The best thing about it is people leave comments. And so far we have somewhere above 3,600 or so registrants, and they are leaving some beautiful comments and kind of helping each other. When possible or necessary, Karen and I try and jump into it. But the good news is there's so many people awakening here and sharing their own experiences that we have lots and lots of very rich material in the comment sections that are at the end of each one of those little 33 days. So it's well worth it for the individual seeker who wants to get on board and start working with these concepts and changing their own life, coming to see their connection with the universe and the meaning and purpose that is inherent in our existence here.
So, Eben, we don't have a whole lot of time left, so I have a couple of questions. So the question to you is, so what do you see as your purpose at this stage in your life?
My purpose is to try and understand this all better. It's no question at all, the deepest mystery, bar none, in all of science, philosophy, culture, 3,000 years of human thought, is the relationship between brain and mind. And believe me, from a materialist perspective, they've hit a dead end. It's called the hard problem of consciousness, the fact that absolutely no one on earth has the remotest clue how to connect the dots between the physical workings of the brain and the emergence of consciousness. And the reason is they have it all backwards. Consciousness actually projects. The mind uses the physical universe, including the brain, as its projector. But what exists primarily and determines all of what unfolds in this reality is in the realm of mind. That's why it's so important for each and every one of us as individuals to develop that relationship with mind and realize very powerfully that the little voice in our head, that linguistic voice, that's the voice of the ego and also the rational, logical, thoughtful, philosophical, scientific mind, that little voice is very limited. It is not who we are. It is not our consciousness at all. What is our consciousness is the awareness, the observer, as Karen mentioned a while ago. And that's what, in these sacred acoustics kind of meditations or in any form of centering prayer or deep meditation going within, people begin to access that universal mind, come to develop that observer, that higher soul. That's the same awareness we come in touch with when we die, when we leave the physical body. That's what NDEers have been saying for thousands of years, that we come in touch with a far more expanded form of awareness that includes souls of departed loved ones, includes this phenomenal force of love, of that God force at the core of all reality that's the very link to our spark of conscious awareness. And going within is the way to do this. I would briefly point out that we explained this much more living in a mindful universe, but the sacred acoustic sounds have to do with intercepting consciousness at a very primitive level. These sounds get to the lower brainstem at a nucleus that evolved 300 million years ago, with the rise of reptiles and amphibians out of the muck. And so we're going for an ancient circuit to try and subvert the normal illusion to the physical world is all that exists, to set your conscious awareness free, to transcend the veil and allow you to have a much broader connection to that universal mind or God consciousness. And that's what all of this revolution is about, is that much deeper connection with who we truly are and the origins of consciousness and of all sorts of the universe itself.
I'm taking another breath here. Karen, so before we have to complete our conversation today, can you give us some practical strategies that we can start implementing on a regular daily basis to support us in making that connection to the greater mind, the greater self that we are? What would be your recommendations, some practical things?
Well, I have to say that 33-day journey is each day the practical part of the course gives 33 different ways to do that. So I'll touch on a couple of them, but we can really go deep there, and it actually guides you to connecting with that oneness by the time you get to the end. It's actually pretty amazing if you follow all the steps. But one that I think is really important is awareness of the heart, moving out of the head and into the heart. And a very simple way to kind of bring that awareness there is to simply imagine that your breath is coming in and out of your heart. I mean, your lungs are right there, that, you know, your mouth is up. Evan has a little trouble with that as a doctor, but most of us can kind of just imagine our breath is moving in and out of our heart. And a really useful way to do this is to imagine that it's actually filling up a bubble surrounding your entire body. And if you can do this on a daily basis, every single day, and while you're doing it, imagine something you feel gratitude for at the same time. This is a very useful tool. This is one of those things you can do when you're commuting, when you're lying in bed, or even when you're standing in line in a bank, or really fun to do is if you're in a meeting with other people and maybe there's some stressful things going on. If you start to breathe in this fashion, knowing that that electromagnetic field is going out around you affecting people, just do this and watch. You don't have to say a word. Watch and see how people may shift and change around you. It's not necessarily immediate, and a lot of other heart fields are going on in that same room likely. But this is a very practical tool that can help you get out of that racing mind and into that really sense of the energy of you that is in the heart. There's no linguistic center in the heart. There's nobody talking down there, and it can be very, very useful.
That's a great practical tool. I really appreciate that. And, gosh, we've come to the end of our conversation. I want to encourage people, first of all, to read Living in a Mindful Universe. It's such an inspiring book. Go over to sacredacoustics.com. If you just want to listen to that sample of that healing sound, but I encourage you to just download the amazing pieces that have been created, so you actually have a longer extended time of listening to the music for healing. And then what I've just been learning about is the 33 days, and if you go to the ebenalexander.com website, and that's ebenalexander.com, you can download that for free. So those are fantastic gifts that you've given us for our journey. And I just so want to thank Dr. Eben Alexander and Karen Newell for their extraordinary passion and purpose and love that they're sharing with us on this journey of awakening. So thank you both for your time today. It's just been a very great blessing to have you on the show.
All right. Well, thanks so much for having us. It's been a real joy to be here, and hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Yes, we always love discussing these topics, and there's never an end.
Okay, well, that's a date. We'll get you back for sure. And to all of you listening, I trust you'll be coming back for more. And until then, remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.